She bit her lip. I don't recall you being so talkative.
Well, perhaps if you'd taken the time to speak with me, you'd have found me to be so.
He snorted, but took the bait, gods damn him. And when would I have spoken to you?
You do recall the little fact that we traveled together from Endovir, don't you? And that I've been here for weeks now?
I sent you those books, he offered.
And did you ever ask me if I had read them?
Had she forgotten to whom she was speaking? I've spoken to you once since we've been here.
She shrugged and made to turn away. Irritated, but slightly curious, he grabbed her arm. Her turquoise eyes glittered as she stared at his hand, and his heart quickened when her gaze rose to his face. Yes, sweaty as she was beautiful.
Aren't you afraid of me?
She glanced at his sword belt. Or are you as deft at handling your sword as Captain Westfall?
He stepped closer, tightening his grip. Better, he whispered in her ear. There, she was blushing and blinking.
Well,
she began, but the timing was off. He'd won. She crossed her arms.
Very amusing, Your Highness.
He bowed dramatically. I do what I can. But you can't have Princess Nehemia here with you.
And why is that?
Do you believe I'm going to kill her?
Why would I kill the one person in this castle who isn't a babbling idiot?
She gave him a look that suggested he was part of the majority.
Not to mention her guards would kill me before I even lifted a hand.
It simply can't happen. She's here to learn our customs, not to spar.
She's a princess. She can do what she likes.
And I suppose you're going to teach her about weaponry?
She cocked her head. Perhaps you're just a little bit afraid of me.
I'll escort her back to her chambers. She gestured widely for him to pass.
Word help you.
He ran a hand through his black hair and approached the princess, who waited for them with a hand on her hip. Your Highness, Dorian said, motioning to her personal guard to join them. I'm afraid we must return you to your chambers.
The princess looked behind his shoulder with a raised eyebrow.
To his dismay, Selena began speaking in Ilwe to the princess, who stomped her staff. She hissed something at him. Dorian's skill with the Ilwe language was spotty at best, and the princess spoke too fast for him to understand. Thankfully, the assassin translated.
She says you can return to your cushions and dancing and leave us be, Selena said.
He tried his best to look serious. Tell her it's unacceptable for her to spar. Selena said something, to which the princess only waved a hand and strode past them and onto the sparring floor. What did you say? Dorian said.
I said you volunteered to be her first partner, she said. Well, you don't want to upset the princess.
I will not spar with the princess.
Would you rather spar with me?
Perhaps if we had a private lesson in your chambers, he said smoothly. Tonight.
I'll be waiting.
She curled her hair around a finger. The princess twirled her staff with strength and precision that made him gulp. Deciding that he didn't feel like having the daylights walloped out of him, he walked to the rack of weapons and selected two wooden swords. How about some basic swordplay instead? He asked Nehemia. To his relief, the princess nodded and handed her staff to one of her guards, then took the practice sword Dorian extended to her. Selena would not make a fool out of him. You stand like this, he said to the princess, taking a defensive stance.
Chapter 18
Selena smiled as she watched the Crown Prince of Otterlin lead the Princess of Ilwe through the basic steps of fencing. He was charming, she supposed, in an arrogant sort of way. But someone with his title could have been far, far worse. It made her uneasy how he'd made her blush. In fact, he was so attractive that she had difficulty not thinking about how attractive he was, and again wondered why he wasn't married. She sort of wanted to kiss him. She swallowed. She'd been kissed before, of course. By Sam, and often enough that she was no stranger to it. But it'd been over a year since she'd lost the assassin she'd grown up with. And even though the thought of kissing anyone else had once made her sick, when she saw Dorian,
Princess Nehemia lunged, slapping Dorian on the wrist with her sword. Selena bit down her laughter. He grimaced and rubbed the sore joint, but then smiled as the princess began gloating.
Damn him for being so handsome.
She leaned against the wall and would have enjoyed the lesson had someone not grabbed her arm hard enough to hurt.
What is this?
Dragged from the wall, she found herself facing Kaol.
What is what?
What is Dorian doing with her?
She shrugged. Sparring?
And why are they sparring?
Because he volunteered to teach her how to fight?
Kaol practically shoved her from him as he approached the pair. They stopped, and Dorian followed Kaol to a corner. They spoke quickly, angrily, before Kaol came back to Selena.
The guards will take you to your chambers.
What?
She remembered their conversation on the balcony and frowned. So much for swapping stories.
The test is tomorrow, and I need to train.
I think you've had enough training for today. It's almost dinner. Your lesson with Brello ended 2 hours ago. Get some rest or you'll be useless tomorrow. And no, I don't know what the test will be, so don't bother asking.
That's absurd, she cried, and a pinch from Kaol kept her voice down.
Princess Nehemia cast a worried glance in Selena's direction, but the assassin waved to her to resume her lesson with the crown prince.
I'm not going to do anything, you insufferable moron.
Are you honestly so blind that you can't see why we can't allow this?
Can't allow? You're just afraid of me.
Don't flatter yourself.
You think I want to go back to Endovir? She hissed. You think I'm not aware of the fact that if I flee, I'll be hunted down for the rest of my life? You think I don't know why I vomit when you and I run in the morning? My body is a wreck. I need to spend these extra hours here, and you shouldn't punish me for it.
I'm not going to pretend to know how a criminal mind works.
She threw her hands in the air.
You know, I actually felt guilty, just a little guilty, and now I remember why I shouldn't have. I hate sitting around, locked in my room, bored out of my senses. I hate all these guards and nonsense. I hate you telling me to hold back when Brello sings Kane's praises, and I'm just there boring and unnoticed in the middle.
I hate being told what I can't do, and I hate you most of all.
He tapped his foot on the ground.
Are you finished?
There was no kindness in Kaol's face, and she clicked her tongue as she left, her fists aching to bash his teeth down his throat. Chapter 19. Sitting in a chair near the hearth of the Great Hall, Cal Tane watched Duke Parrington converse with Queen Georgina atop her dais. It had been a shame that Dorian had left so quickly an hour ago. She hadn't even had the chance to speak to him, which was especially irksome, given that she'd spent the better part of the morning dressing for court. Her raven-black hair was neatly coiled around her head, and her skin glowed golden from the subtle shimmering powders she'd dusted on her face. Though the bindings on her pink and yellow gown crushed her ribs, and the pearls and diamonds around her neck strangled her, she kept her chin high, poised. Dorian had left, but having Parrington show up was an unexpected surprise. The Duke rarely visited court. This had to be important. Cal Tane rose from her chair by the fire as the Duke bowed to the Queen and strode toward the doors. As she stepped into his path, he paused at the sight of her, his eyes gleaming with a hunger that made her want to cringe. He bowed low.
"Milady?"
"Your Grace," she smiled,
forcing all that repulsion down deep, deep, deep.
"I hope you're well,"
he said, offering his arm to lead her out of the hall. She smiled again, taking it. Though he was somewhat rotund, hard muscle lay in the arm beneath her hand.
"Very well, thank you. And yourself? I feel I haven't seen you in days and days. What a wonderful surprise to have you visit the court."
Parrington gave her a yellow smile.
"I've missed you as well, milady."
She tried not to wince as his hairy, meaty fingers rubbed her pristine skin, and instead delicately inclined her head toward him.
"I hope Her Majesty was in good health. Was your conversation a pleasant one?"
Oh, it was so dangerous to pry, especially when she was here on his good graces. Meeting him last spring had been a stroke of luck, and convincing him to invite her to court, mostly by implying what might await him once she was out of her father's household and without a chaperone, hadn't been that difficult. But she wasn't here to simply enjoy the pleasures of the court. No, she was tired of being a minor lady, waiting to be married off to the highest bidder, tired of petty politics and easily manipulated fools.
Her Majesty is quite well, actually, Parrington said,
leading Caltaine toward her rooms. Her stomach clenched a bit. Though he didn't hide that he wanted her, he hadn't pushed her into bed, yet. But with a man like Parrington, who always got what he wanted, she didn't have much time to find a way to avoid owning up to the subtle promise she'd made him earlier that year. But, the Duke went on, with a son of marriageable age, she's busy.
Caltaine kept her face plain, calm, serene. Can we expect any news of an engagement in the near future?
Another dangerous question.
I certainly hope so,
the Duke grumbled, his face darkening beneath his ruddy hair. The jagged scar along his cheek stood out starkly.
Her Majesty already has a list of girls deemed appropriate.
The Duke halted, remembering whom he spoke to, and Caltaine batted her eyelashes at him.
Oh, I'm quite sorry, she purred. I didn't mean to pry into the royal household's affairs.
She patted his arm, her heart kicking into a full gallop. Dorian had been given a list of appropriate brides. Who was on it? And how could she... No, she'd think of that later. For now, she had to find out who stood between her and the crown.
It's nothing to apologize for, he said,
his dark eyes shining.
Come, tell me what you've been doing these past few days.
Not much of note, though I met a very interesting young woman, she said casually,
leading him down a window-lined stairway into the glass section of the castle.
A friend of Dorian's, the Lady Lillian, he called her.
The Duke went positively rigid.
You met her?
Oh, yes. She's quite kind.
The lie rolled off of her tongue.
When I spoke to her today, she mentioned how much the Crown Prince likes her. I hope for her sake she was on the Queen's list.
While she'd wanted some information about Lillian, she hadn't expected this.
The Lady Lillian? Of course she isn't.
The poor thing. I suspect her heart will be broken. I know it's not my place to pry, she went on,
the Duke growing redder and more furious by the moment.
But I heard it not an hour ago from Dorian himself that...
That what?
A thrill went through her at his anger. Not anger at her, but at Lillian. At the weapon she'd just had the good fortune to stumble across.
That he's very attracted to her, possibly in love with her.
That's absurd.
It's true.
She gave a morose shake of the head.
How tragic.
Foolish is what it is.
The Duke stopped at the end of the hallway that led to Caltaine's room. His anger loosened his tongue.
Foolish and daft and impossible.
Impossible?
Someday I will explain why.
A clock chimed, off kilter, and Parrington turned in its direction.
I have a council meeting.
He leaned close enough to whisper in her ear, his breath hot and damp against her skin.
Perhaps I'll see you tonight.
He dragged a hand down her side before he walked away. She watched him go, and when he disappeared, she let out a shuddering sigh. But if he could get her close to Dorian... She had to find out who her competition was. But first, she had to find a way to get Lillian's claws out of the prince. List or no list, she was a threat. And if the Duke hated her as much as it seemed, she might have powerful allies when the time came to make sure Lillian released her hold on Dorian. Dorian and Kaol didn't say much as they walked to dinner in the Great Hall. Princess Nehemia was safely in her chambers, surrounded by her guards. It had been quickly agreed that while it was foolish of Selena to spar with the princess, Kaol's absence was inexcusable, even with the dead champion to investigate.
"You seemed rather friendly with Sardothian," Kaol said, his voice cold.
"Jealous, are we?"
Dorian teased. "I'm more concerned for your safety. She might be pretty and might impress you with her cleverness, but she's still an assassin, Dorian."
"You sound like my father."
"It's common sense. Stay away from her, champion or no."
"Don't give me orders."
"I'm only doing it for your safety."
"Why would she kill me? I think she likes being pampered. If she hasn't attempted to escape or kill anyone, then why would she do it now?"
He patted his friend on the shoulder.
"You worry too much."
"It's my occupation to worry."
"Then you'll have gray hair before you're 25, and Sardothian certainly will not fall in love with you."
"What nonsense are you talking?"
"Well, if she does try to escape, which she won't, then she'll break your heart. You'd be forced to throw her in the dungeons, hunt her down, or kill her."
"Dorian, I don't like her."
Sensing his friend's growing irritation, Dorian changed the subject.
"What about that dead champion, the Eye Eater? Any idea yet who did it or why?"
Kaol's eyes darkened.
"I've studied it again and again over the past few days. The body was totally destroyed."
The color leached from Kaol's cheeks.
"Innards scooped out and gone. Even the brain was missing.
I've sent a message to your father about it,
but I'll continue investigating in the meantime." "I bet it was just a drunken brawl," Dorian said, though he had been in plenty of brawls himself and had never known anyone to go about removing someone's innards.
A trickle of fear formed in the back of Dorian's mind.
"My father will probably be glad to have the Eye-Eater dead and gone."
"I hope so."
Dorian grinned and put an arm around the captain's shoulders. "With you looking into it, I'm sure it'll be solved tomorrow," he said, leading his friend into the dining hall.
Chapter 20 Selena closed her book and sighed. What a terrible ending.
She stood from the chair, unsure where she was going, and walked out of her bedroom. She'd been willing to apologize to Kaol when he found her sparring with Nehemia that afternoon. But his behavior... She paced through her rooms. He had more important things to do than guard the world's most famous criminal, did he? She didn't enjoy being cruel, but hadn't he deserved it? She'd really made a fool out of herself by mentioning the vomiting, and she'd called him all sorts of nasty things. Did he trust her or hate her?
Selena looked at her hands and realized she had wrung them so badly that her fingers were red. How had she gone from the most feared prisoner in Endovir to this sappy mess? She had greater matters to worry about, like the test tomorrow, and this dead champion. She'd already altered the hinges on all her doors so that they squealed loudly any time they opened. If someone entered her room, she'd know well in advance. And she'd managed to embed some stolen sewing needles into a bar of soap for a makeshift miniature pike. It was better than nothing. Especially if this murderer had a taste for champion blood. She forced her hands to her sides, shaking her unease, and strode into the music and gaming room. She could not play billiards or cards by herself, but... Selena eyed the pianoforte. She used to play. Oh, she loved to play. Loved music. The way music could break and heal and make everything seem possible and heroic. Carefully, as if approaching a sleeping person, Selena walked to the large instrument. She pulled out the wooden bench, wincing at the loud scraping sound it made. Folding back the heavy lid, she pushed her feet on the pedals, testing them. She eyed the smooth ivory keys, and then the black keys, which were like the gaps between teeth. She had been good once, perhaps better than good.
Arobin Hommel made her play for him whenever they saw each other.
She wondered if Arobin knew she was out of the mines. Would he try to free her if he did?
She still didn't dare to face the possibility of who might have betrayed her. Things had been such a haze when she'd been captured. In 2 weeks, She'd lost Sam and her own freedom, and lost something of herself in those blurry days, too. Sam. What would he make of all this? If he'd been alive when she was captured, he would have had her out of the royal dungeons before the king even got word of her imprisonment. But Sam, like her, had been betrayed. And sometimes the absence of him hit her so hard that she forgot how to breathe. She touched a lower note. It was deep and throbbing, full of sorrow and anger. Gingerly, with one hand, she tapped out a simple, slow melody on the higher keys. Echoes, shreds of memories arising out of the void of her mind. Her rooms were so silent that the music seemed obtrusive. She moved her right hand, playing upon the flats and sharps. It was a piece that she used to play again and again until Arabin would yell at her to play something else. She played a chord, then another, added in a few silver notes from her right hand, pushed once on a pedal, and was gone. The notes burst from her fingers, staggering at first, but then more confidently as the emotion in the music took over. It was a mournful piece, but it made her into something clean and new. She was surprised that her hands had not forgotten, that somewhere in her mind, after a year of darkness and slavery, music was still alive and breathing, that somewhere, between the notes, was Sam. She forgot about time as she drifted between pieces, voicing the unspeakable, opening old wounds, playing and playing as the sound forgave and saved her. Leaning against the doorway, Dorian stood, utterly transfixed. She'd been playing for some time with her back to him. He wondered when she'd notice him, or if she'd ever stop at all. He wouldn't mind listening forever. He had come here with the intention of embarrassing a snide assassin, and had instead found a young woman pouring her secrets into a pianoforte. Dorian peeled himself from the wall. For all her assassinating experience, she didn't notice him until he sat down on the bench beside her. "You play her fingers slipped on the keys, which let out a loud, awful clank, and she was halfway to the rack of cue sticks when she beheld him. He could have sworn her eyes were damp. "What are you doing here?" She glanced to the door. Was she planning on using one of those cue sticks against him? "Kaol isn't with me," he said with a quick smile, "if that's what you're wondering." "I apologize if I interrupted." He wondered at her discomfort as she turned red. It seemed far too human an emotion for Otterlin's assassin. Perhaps his earlier plan to embarrass her wasn't foiled yet. "But you were playing so beautifully that I..." "It's fine." She walked toward one of the chairs. He stood, blocking her path. She was of surprisingly average height. He glanced down at her form. Average height aside, her curves were enticing. "What are you doing here?" she repeated. He smiled roguishly. "We decided to meet tonight, don't you remember?" "I thought it was a joke." "I'm Crown Prince of Otterlin." He sank into a chair before the fire. "I never joke."
"Are you allowed to be here?"
"Allowed? Again, I'm a prince. I can do what I like."
"Yes, but I'm Otterlin's assassin."
He wouldn't be intimidated, even if she could grab that billiards cue and skewer him with it in a matter of seconds. "From your playing, it seems that you're a great deal more than that."
"What do you mean?"
"Well," he said, trying not to get lost in her strange, lovely eyes, "I don't think anyone who plays like that can be just a criminal."
"It seems like you have a soul," he teased. "Of course I have a soul. Everyone has a soul."
She was still red. He made her that uncomfortable? He fought his grin. This was too much fun. "How'd you like the books?"
"They were very nice," she said quietly. "They were wonderful, actually."
"I'm glad."
Their eyes met, and she retreated behind the back of the chair.
If he didn't know better, he would have thought himself to be the assassin. "How's training going? Any competitors giving you trouble?"
"Excellently," she said, but the corners of her mouth drifted downward. "And no,
After today, I don't think any of us will be giving anyone any trouble.
It took him a moment to realize she was thinking of the competitor who had been killed while trying to escape. She chewed on her bottom lip, quiet for a heartbeat, before she asked,
"Did Kaol give the order to kill Sven?"
"No," he said. "My father commanded all the guards to shoot to kill if any of you tried to escape. I don't think Kaol would ever have given that order," he added,
though he wasn't sure why. But the unnerving stillness in her eyes abated, at least. When she didn't say more, Dorian asked as casually as he could, "On that note, how are you and Kaol getting along?"
Of course, it was a totally innocent question.
She shrugged, and he tried not to read too far into the gesture.
"Fine. I think he hates me a bit, but given his position, I'm not surprised."
"Why do you think he hates you?" For some reason, he couldn't bring himself to deny it.
"Because I'm an assassin and he's captain of the guard, forced to belittle himself by minding the would-be king's champion."
"Do you wish it were otherwise?"
He gave her a lazy grin. That question wasn't so innocent.
She inched around the chair, coming closer to him, and his heart jumped a beat.
"Well, who wants to be hated? Though I'd rather be hated than invisible.
But it makes no difference."
She wasn't convincing.
"You're lonely,"
he said it before he could stop himself.
"Lonely?"
She shook her head, and finally, after all that coaxing, sat down. He fought against the urge to reach across the space between them to see if her hair was as silky as it looked.
"No. I can survive well enough on my own, if given proper reading material."
He looked at the fire, trying not to think about where she'd been only weeks before, and what that kind of loneliness might have felt like. There were no books in Endovir.
"Still, it can't be pleasant to be one's own companion at all times."
"And what would you do?" She laughed. "I'd rather not be seen as one of your lovers."
"And what's wrong with that?"
"I'm already notorious as an assassin. I don't particularly feel like being notorious for sharing your bed."
He choked, but she went on.
"Would you like me to explain why, or is it enough for me to say that I don't take jewels and trinkets as payment for my affection?"
He snarled. "I'm not going to debate morality with an assassin. You kill people for money, you know."
Her eyes became hard, and she pointed to the door.
"You may leave now."
"You're dismissing me?"
He didn't know whether to laugh or yell.
"Shall I summon Kaol to see what he thinks?"
She crossed her arms, knowing she had won. Perhaps she'd also realized that there was fun to be had in riling him, too.
"Why should I be thrown from your rooms for stating the truth?
You just called me little more than a whoremonger." He hadn't had this much fun in ages.
"Tell me about your life.
How you learned to play the pianoforte so masterfully. And what was that piece? It was so sad.
Were you thinking about a secret lover?" He winked.
"I practiced," she stood, walking toward the door. "And yes," she snapped, "I was."
"You're quite prickly tonight," he said, trailing her.
He stopped a foot away, but the space between them felt strangely intimate, especially as he purred, "You're not nearly as chatty as you were this afternoon."
"I'm not some odd commodity that you can gawk at." She stepped closer. "I'm not some carnival exhibit, and you won't use me as part of some unfulfilled desire for adventure and excitement, which is undoubtedly why you chose me to be your champion."
His mouth fell open and he conceded a step.
"What?" was all he managed.
She stalked past him and dropped into the armchair. At least she wasn't leaving.
"Did you honestly think I wouldn't realize why you came here tonight? As someone who gave me the crown of a hero to read, which suggests a rather fanciful mind that yearns for adventure?"
"I don't think you're an adventurer," he muttered.
"Oh? The castle offers so much excitement that the presence of Otterlin's assassin is nothing unusual? Nothing that would entice a young prince who's been confined to court all his life? And what does this competition suggest, for that matter? I'm already at your father's disposal. I won't become his son's jester, too."
It was his turn to blush. Had he ever been scolded by anyone like this? His parents and tutors, perhaps, but certainly not a young woman.
"Don't you know who you're talking to?"
"My dear prince," she drawled, examining her nails. "You're alone in my rooms. The hallway door is very far away. I can say whatever I wish." He burst out laughing. She sat up and watched him, her head tilted to the side. Her cheeks were flushed, making her blue eyes even brighter. Did she know what he might have wanted to do with her if she wasn't an assassin?
"I'll go,"
he said at last, stopping himself from wondering if he could actually risk it. Risk his father's and Kaol's wrath, and what might happen if he decided to damn the consequences. "But I'll return. Soon."
"I'm sure," she said dryly.
"Good night, Sardothian." He looked around her rooms and grinned. "Tell me something before I leave. This mystery lover of yours, he doesn't live in the castle, does he?"
He instantly knew he'd said the wrong thing when some of the light vanished from her eyes.
"Good night," she said a bit coldly. Dorian shook his head. "I didn't mean to..." She just waved him off, looking toward the fire. Understanding his dismissal, he strode to the door, each of his footsteps sounding in the now too silent room. He was almost to the threshold when she spoke, her voice distant. "His name was Sam."
She was still staring at the fire. "Was Sam.
What happened?"
She looked at him, smiling sadly. "He died."
"When?"
he got out.
He would have never teased her like that, never said a damn word if he'd known. Her words were strangled as she said,
13 months ago.
A glimmer of pain flashed across her face, so real and endless that he felt it in his gut.
"I'm sorry," he breathed.
She shrugged, as if it could somehow diminish the grief he still saw in her eyes, shining so bright in the firelight.
"So am I," she whispered,
and faced the fire again. Sensing she was truly done talking this time, Dorian cleared his throat.
"Good luck at the test tomorrow."
She didn't say anything as he left the room. He couldn't banish her heart-wrenching music from his mind, even when he burned his mother's list of eligible maidens, even when he read a long book into the night, even when he finally fell asleep. Chapter 21 Selena dangled from the stone wall of the castle, her legs trembling as she dug her tar-covered fingers and toes into the cracks between the giant blocks. Brello shouted something at the other 19 remaining champions scaling the castle walls, but from 70 feet up, the wind carried his words away. One of the champions hadn't shown up for the test, and even his guards hadn't known where he went. Maybe he'd actually managed to escape. Risking it seemed better than this miserably stupid test, anyway. She gritted her teeth, inching her hand upward, and pulled herself up another foot. 20 feet up and about 30 feet away flapped the object of this insane race, a golden flag. The test was simple. Climb the castle to where the flag waved 90 feet in the air and retrieve it. First one who grabbed the flag and brought it back down received a pat on the back. Last one to reach the designated spot would be sent back to whatever gutter they came from. Surprisingly, no one had fallen yet, perhaps because the path to the flag was fairly easy. Balconies, windowsills, and trellises covered most of the space. Selena scooted up another few feet, her fingers aching. Looking down was always a bad idea. Even if Arobin had forced her to stand on the ledge of his assassin's keep for hours on end to become accustomed to heights. She panted as she grasped another window ledge and hoisted herself up. It was deep enough that she could crouch within, and she took a moment to study the other competitors. Sure enough, Kane was in the lead, and had taken the easiest path toward the flag. Grave and Varen on his trail, Nox close behind, and Paylor, the young assassin, not far below him. There were so many competitors following him that their gear often got tangled together. They'd each been given the opportunity to select one object to aid them in their ascent. Rope, spikes, special boots. And sure enough, Kane had gone right for the rope. She'd taken a small tin of tar, and as Selena rose from her crouch in the windowsill, her sticky black hands and bare feet easily gripped the stone wall. She'd used some rope to strap the tin to her belt, and before she stepped out of the shade of the sill, she rubbed a little more on her palms. Someone gasped below, and she swallowed the urge to glance down. She knew she'd taken a more difficult path, but it was better than fighting off all the competitors taking the easy route. She wouldn't put it past Grave or Varen to shove her off the wall. Her hand suctioned onto the stone, and Selena heaved herself upward just in time to hear a shriek, a thump, and then silence, followed by the shouting of onlookers. A competitor had fallen and died. She looked down and beheld the body of Ned Clement, the murderer who'd called himself the Scythe and spent years in the labor camps of Calicalla for his crimes. A shudder went through her. Though the murder of the Eye-Eater had made many of the champions quite down, the sponsor certainly didn't seem to care that this test might very well kill a few more of them. She shimmied up a drain pipe, her thighs clinging to the iron. Kane hooked his long rope around a leering gargoyle's neck and swung across an expanse of flat wall, landing on a balcony ledge 15 feet below the flag. She fought her frustration as she worked her way up higher and higher, following the course of the drainpipe. The other competitors shuffled along, following Kane's path. There were a few more shouts, and she looked down long enough to see that Grave was causing a backup because he couldn't manage to toss his rope around the gargoyle's neck as Kane had. Varen nudged the assassin aside and moved past him, easily securing his own rope. Nox, now behind Grave, made to do the same, but Grave started cursing at him, and Nox stopped, lifting his hands in a gesture of placation. Smirking, Selena braced her blackened feet on a stabilizing bracket holding the pipe in place. She'd soon be directly parallel to the flag, and then only 30 feet of bare stone would separate her from it. Selena eased farther up the pipe, her toes sticking to the metal. 15 feet below her pipe, a mercenary was clutching the horns of a gargoyle as he set about fastening his rope around its head. He seemed to be taking the faster route across a cluster of gargoyles. Then he'd have to swing onto a landing 18 feet away before making his way to the other gargoyles on which Grave and Nox now quarreled. She was in no danger of him trying to scale the drainpipe to bother her. So inch by inch, she moved up, the wind battering her hair this way and that. It was then that she heard Nox shout, and Selena looked in time to see Grave shove him from their perch atop the gargoyle's back. Nox swung wide, the rope wrapped around his middle going taut as he collided with the castle wall below. Selena froze, her breath catching as Nox scraped his hands and feet against the stone to catch hold. But Grave wasn't done yet. He bent under the guise of adjusting his boot, and Selena saw a small dagger glint in the sunlight. How he'd gotten the weapon past his guards was a feat in itself. Selena's warning cry was carried away by the wind as Grave set about sawing Nox's rope from its tether on the gargoyle. None of the other champions nearby bothered to do anything, though Paylor paused a moment before easing around Grave. If Nox died, it was one less competitor, and if they interfered, it might cost them this test. Selena knew she should keep moving, but something kept her rooted to the spot. Nox couldn't find a hold on the stone wall, and without a nearby ledge or gargoyle to grasp, he had nowhere to go but down. Once the rope broke, he'd fall. One by one, the threads of his rope snapped beneath Grave's dagger, and Nox, sensing the vibrations, looked up at the assassin in horror. If he fell, there was no chance of surviving. A few more slices of Grave's blade, and the rope would be severed entirely. The rope groaned. Selena moved. She slid down the drainpipe, the flesh of her feet and hands tearing open as the metal cut into her skin, but she didn't let herself think of the pain. The mercenary on the gargoyle below only had time to lean into the wall as she slammed onto the creature's head, gripping its horns to steady herself. The mercenary had already tied one end of his climbing rope around the gargoyle's neck. Now she seized it and tied the other around her own waist. The rope was long enough and strong enough, and the four gargoyles perched beside hers would provide enough space to run.
"Touch this rope and I'll gut you," she warned the mercenary, and readied herself.
Nox shouted at Grave, and she dared a look to where the thief dangled. There was a sharp snag of rope breaking, and Nox's cry of fear and rage, and Selena took off, sprinting across the backs of the four gargoyles, before she launched herself into the void.
Chapter 22. Wind tore at her, but Selena kept her focus on Nox, falling so fast, so far from her outstretched hands. People shouted below, and the light bouncing off the glass castle blinded her. But there he was, just a hand's breadth from her fingers, his gray eyes wide, his arms swinging as if he could turn them into wings. In a heartbeat, her arms were around his middle, and she slammed into him so hard that the breath was knocked from her chest. Together they plummeted like a stone, down, down, down toward the rising ground. Nox grabbed the rope, but even that wasn't enough to lighten the blinding impact on her torso as the rope went taut. She held on to him with every ounce of strength she had, willing her arms not to let him go. The rope sent them careening toward the wall. Selena hardly had the sense to lean her head away from the approaching stones, and the impact burst through her side and shoulder. She held tight to him still, focusing on her arms, on her too shallow breathing. They hung there, flat against the wall, panting as they looked at the ground 30 feet below. The rope held.
"Lillian,"
Nox said, gasping for breath. He pressed his face onto her hair.
"Gods above."
But cheers erupted from below and drowned out his words. Selena's limbs trembled so violently that she had to focus on gripping Nox, and her stomach turned over and over and over. But they were still in the middle of the test, still expected to complete it, and Selena looked up. All the champions had stopped to see her save the falling thief, all except one, who perched high, high above them. Selena could only gape as the flag was ripped down, and Kane howled his triumph. More cheers rose up to meet them as Kane waved the flag for everyone to see. She seethed. She would have won if she'd taken the easy route. She would have gotten there in half the time it took Kane. But Kaol told her to stay in the middle anyway, and her path had been far more impressive and demonstrative of her skills. Kane just had to jump and swing. Amateur scaling. Besides, if she had won, if she'd gone the easy way, she wouldn't have saved Nox. She clenched her jaw. Could she get back up there in time? Perhaps Nox could take the rope, and she'd just scale the wall with her bare hands. There was nothing worse than second place. But even as she thought it, Varen, Grave, Paylor, and Renault climbed the last few feet to the spot, tapping it with a hand before descending.
"Lillian, Nox, hurry up,"
Brello called, and she peered down at the weapons master. Selena scowled and started sliding her feet along the cracks in the stone, looking for a foothold. Her skin, raw and bleeding in spots, stung as she found a crevice for her toes to squeeze into. Carefully, carefully, she pulled herself up.
"I'm sorry,"
Nox breathed, his legs knocking into hers as he also sought out a foothold.
"It's fine," she told him.
Shaking, numb, Selena climbed back up the wall, leaving Nox to figure out the way on his own. Foolish. It had been so foolish to save him. What had she been thinking?
"Cheer up," Kaol said, drinking from his glass of water. 18th place is fine. At least Nox placed behind you."
Selena said nothing and pushed her carrots around on her plate. It had taken 2 baths and an entire bar of soap to get the tar off her aching hands and feet, and Philippa had spent 30 minutes cleaning out and binding the wounds on each. And though Selena had stopped shaking, she could still hear the shriek and thump of Ned Clement hitting the ground. They'd carried his body away before she finished the test. Only his death had saved Knox from elimination. Grave hadn't even been scolded. There had been no rules against playing dirty. "You're doing exactly like we planned," Kaol went on, "though I'd hardly consider your valiant rescue to be entirely discreet." She glared at him. "Well, I still lost." While Dorian had congratulated her for saving Knox, and while the thief had hugged and thanked her again and again, only Kaol had frowned when the test was over. Apparently, daring rescues weren't part of a jewel thief's repertoire. Kaol's brown eyes shone golden in the midday sun.
"Wasn't learning to lose gracefully part of your training?"
"No," she said sourly. "Aerobin told me that second place was just a nice title for the first loser."
"Aerobin Hommel?" Kaol asked, setting down his glass. "The king of the assassins?"
She looked toward the window, and the glittering expanse of Rifthold barely visible beyond it. It was strange to think that Aerobin was in the same city, that he was so close to her now. "You know he was my master, don't you?"
"I'd forgotten,"
Kaol said. Aerobin would have flogged her for saving Knox, jeopardizing her own safety and place in this competition.
"He oversaw your training personally?"
"He trained me himself, and then brought in tutors from all over Aurelia. The fighting masters from the rice fields of the southern continent, poison experts from the Bogdano jungle. Once he sent me to the silent assassins in the Red Desert. No price was too high for him. Or me," she added, fingering the fine thread on her bathrobe. "He didn't bother to tell me until I was 14 that I was expected to pay him back for all of it."
"He trained you, and then made you pay for it?"
She shrugged, but was unable to hide the flash of anger. "Courtesans go through the same experience. They're taken in at a young age, and are bound to their brothels until they can earn back every coin that went into their training, upkeep, and wardrobe."
"That's despicable," he spat,
and she blinked at the anger in his voice, anger that, for once, was not directed at her.
"Did you pay it back?"
A cold smile that didn't reach her eyes spread across her face. "Oh, down to the last copper. And he then went out and spent all of it. Over 500,000 gold coins, gone in 3 hours. Kaol started from his seat. She shoved the memory down so deep that it stopped hurting. "You still haven't apologized," she said, changing the subject before Kaol could inquire further.
"Apologized? For what?"
"For all the horrid things you said yesterday afternoon when I was sparring with Nehemia." He narrowed his eyes, taking the bait.
"I won't apologize for speaking the truth."
"The truth? You treated me like I'm a crazed criminal."
"And you said that you hated me more than anyone alive."
"I meant every word of it." However, a smile began to tug at her lips, and she soon found it reflected on his face. He tossed a piece of bread at her, which she caught in one hand and threw back at him. He caught it with ease. "Idiot," she said, grinning now.
"Crazed criminal," he returned, grinning too.
"I really do hate you."
"At least I didn't come in 18th place," he said.
Selena felt her nostrils flare, and it was all Kaol could do to duck the apple she chucked at his head. It wasn't until later that Philippa brought the news. The champion who hadn't shown up for the test had been found dead in a servant's stairwell, brutally mauled and dismembered. The new murder cast a pall over the next 2 weeks, and the 2 tests they brought with them. Selena passed the tests, stealth and tracking, without drawing much attention to herself or risking her neck to save anyone. No other champions were murdered, thankfully, but Selena still found herself looking over her shoulder constantly, even though Kaol seemed to consider the 2 murders to be just unfortunate incidents. Every day she got better at running, going farther and faster, and managed to keep from killing Kane when he taunted her at training. The Crown Prince didn't bother to show his face in her rooms again, and she only saw him during the tests, when he usually just grinned and winked at her and made her feel ridiculously tingly and warm. But she had more important things to worry about. There were only 9 weeks left until the final duel, and some of the others, including Nox, were doing well enough that those 4 spots were starting to seem rather precious. Kane would definitely be there, but who would the other final 3 be? She'd always been so sure she'd make it. But, if she were honest with herself, Selena wasn't so sure anymore. Chapter 23 Selena gaped at the ground. She knew these sharp gray rocks, knew how they crunched beneath her feet, how they smelled after the rain, how they could so easily cut into her skin when she was thrown down. The rocks stretched for miles, rising into jagged, fang-like mountains that pierced the cloudy sky. In the frigid wind, she had little clothing to protect her from its stinging gusts. As she touched the dirty rags, her stomach rose in her throat. What had happened? She pivoted, shackles clanking, and took in the desolate waste that was Endovir. She had failed. Failed and been sent back here. There was no chance of escape. She had tasted freedom, come so close to it, and now... Selena screamed as excruciating pain shot down her back, barely heralded by the crack of the whip. She fell onto the ground, stone slicing into her raw knees.
"Get on your feet!"
someone barked. Tears stung her eyes, and the whip creaked as it rose again. She would be killed this time. She would die from the pain of it. The whip fell, slicing into bone, reverberating through her body, making everything collapse and explode in agony, shifting her body into a graveyard, a dead... Selena's eyes flew open. She panted.
"Are you..."
someone said beside her, and she jerked. Where was she?
"It was a dream," said Kaol.
She stared at him, then looked around the room, running a hand through her hair. Rifthold, Rifthold, that's where she was, in the glass castle. No, in the stone castle beneath. She was sweating, and the sweat on her back felt uncomfortably like blood. She felt dizzy, nauseated, too small and too large all at once. Though her windows were shut, an odd draft from somewhere in her room kissed her face, smelling strangely of roses.
"Selena, it was a dream,"
the captain of the guard said again.
"You were screaming."
He gave her a shaky smile.
"I thought you were being murdered."
Selena reached around to touch her back, beneath her nightshirt. She could feel the 3 ridges. And some smaller ones, but nothing, nothing. "I was being whipped." She shook her head to remove the memory from her mind. "What are you doing here? It's not even dawn." She crossed her arms, flushing slightly.
"It's Sam Hewen. I'm canceling our training today, but I wanted to see if you plan to attend the service."
"Today's... what? It's Sam Hewen today? Why has no one mentioned it? Is there a feast tonight?" Could she have become so enmeshed in the competition that she'd lost track of time? He frowned.
"Of course, but you're not invited."
"Of course. And will you be summoning the dead to you this haunted night, or lighting a bonfire with your companions?"
"I don't partake in such superstitious nonsense."
"Be careful, my cynical friend," she warned, putting a hand in the air. "The gods and the dead are closest to the earth this day. They can hear every nasty comment you make." He rolled his eyes.
"It's a silly holiday to celebrate the coming of winter. The bonfires just produce ash to cover the fields."
"As an offering to the gods to keep them safe."
"As a way to fertilize them."
Selena pushed back the covers. "So says you," she said as she stood. She adjusted her drenched nightgown. She reeked of sweat. He snorted, following after her as she walked.
I never took you for a superstitious person. How does that fit into your career?
She glared at him over her shoulder before she strode into the bathing chamber, Kaol close behind. She paused on the threshold.
Are you going to join me? She said, and Kaol stiffened, realizing his error. He slammed the door in response.
Selena found him waiting in her dining room when she emerged, her hair dripping water onto the floor.
Don't you have your own breakfast?
You still haven't given me an answer.
An answer to what?
She sat down across the table and spooned porridge into a bowl. All that was needed was a heap, no, three heaps, of sugar, and some hot cream, and—
Are you going to temple?
I'm allowed to go to temple, but not to the feast?
She took a spoonful of the porridge.
Religious observances shouldn't be denied to anyone.
And the feast is?
A show of debauchery.
Ah, I see.
She swallowed another bite.
Oh, she loved porridge, but perhaps it needed another spoonful of sugar.
Well, are you going? We need to leave soon if you are.
No, she said through her food.
For someone so superstitious, you risk angering the gods by not attending. I imagine that an assassin would take more interest in the Day of the Dead.
She made a demented face as she continued eating.
I worship in my own way. Perhaps I'll make a sacrifice or two of my own.
He rose, patting his sword.
Mind yourself while I'm gone. Don't bother dressing too elaborately. Brello told me that you're still training this afternoon. You've got a test tomorrow.
Again? Didn't we just have one 3 days ago? She moaned.
The last test had been javelin throwing on horseback, and a spot on her wrist was still tender. But he said nothing more, and her chambers turned silent. Though she tried to forget it, the sound of the whip still snapped in her ears.
Grateful the service was finally over, Dorian Havilliard strode by himself through the castle grounds. Religion neither convinced nor moved him, and after hours of sitting in a pew, muttering prayer after prayer, he was in desperate need of some fresh air and solitude. He sighed through his clenched teeth, rubbing a spot on his temple, and headed toward the garden. He passed a cluster of ladies, each of whom curtsied and giggled behind their fans. Dorian gave them a terse nod as he strode by. His mother had used the ceremony as a chance to point out all the eligible ladies to him. He'd spent the entire service trying not to scream at the top of his lungs. Dorian turned around a hedge, almost crashing into a figure of blue-green velvet. It was the color of a mountain lake, that gem-like shade that didn't quite have a name. Not to mention the dress was about 100 years out of fashion. His gaze rose to her face, and he smiled.
"Hello, Lady Lillian," he said, bowing, and then turned to her two companions. "Princess Nehemia? Captain Westfall?"
Dorian eyed the assassin's dress again. The folds of fabric, like the flowing waters of a river, were rather attractive.
"You're looking festive." Selena's brows lowered. "The Lady Lillian's servants were attending the service when she dressed," said Kaol. "There was nothing else to wear."
Of course, corsets required assistance to get in and out of, and the dresses were a labyrinth of secret clasps and ties.
"My apologies, my lord prince," Selena said. Her eyes were bright and angry, and a blush rose to her cheek. "I'm truly sorry my clothes don't suit your taste."
"No, no,"
he said quickly, glancing at her feet. They were clad in red shoes, red like the winter berries beginning to pop out on the bushes.
"You look very nice, just a bit out of place."
"Centuries, actually."
She gave him an exasperated look.
He turned to Nehemia.
"Forgive me," he said in his best eel way, which wasn't very impressive at all. "How are you?"
Her eyes shone with amusement at his shoddy eel way, but she nodded in acknowledgement.
"I am well, Your Highness," she answered in his language.
Dorian's attention flicked to her two guards, who lurked in the shadows nearby, waiting, watching. Dorian's blood thrummed in his veins.
For weeks now, Duke Parrington had been pushing for a plan to bring more forces into Eelway, to crush the rebels so efficiently that they wouldn't dare challenge Otterlin's rule again. Just yesterday, the Duke presented a plan. They would deploy more legions and keep Nehemia here to discourage any retaliation from the rebels. Not particularly inclined to